Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, I've just been reading a poll here that says one American in three believes you are a Muslim.
Well, that one American is Laura Schlesinger, I think.
But here's the thing that surprises me a little bit. Barack Obama immediately came out and said he didn't think you were a Muslim because he hadn't seen you around at the mosque.
Well, I haven't seen his birth certificate either. But yet, many Americans are not sure that President Obama is indeed a Christian.
A remarkable number in this Pew Research Center, this was one particular poll, 3,000 people surveyed earlier this summer before the New York mosque controversy blew up and became the cable television staple that it is today. These people said 40-some percent they didn't know what religion their president was. About a third said, oh, he's a Christian. And, of course, that is his religious identification. And then one in five said he's a Muslim. And that's up from 11% who thought so about a year and a half ago.
Well, first of all, for example, I don't think anybody knows the religion of James Knox Polk, and he was one of our presidents. But if you ask people around the country what was President Polk's religion, they don't know.
I think if people stopped and reflected upon this for even a moment, they would realize that every American president, from George Washington on, whether he was particularly religious or not, has identified himself as some form of Christian. A number of them were Unitarians. A number of them were
Quaker, you know, even. Right?
Quaker, even. We had Richard Nixon listed Quaker. Himself as a Quaker.
Herbert Hoover was a Quaker.
And there has rarely been any particular controversy about the particular denomination of presidents until we got to John F. Kennedy and the first Catholic in the White House.
What about President Lieberman?
That was one of the main things people said about the prospect of a Vice President Lieberman. Right. Becoming a President Lieberman, that he would obviously be the first Jewish president. And the surprising thing to me is that all these months after Barack Obama actually came to the presidency, there is still 40% of the people saying they're not sure what religion he is. Is that because of his name, which is, after all, a name that he was given by his Muslim father? Or is it because he hasn't been showing up at church as often as George W. Bush did? Why is it people don't seem to be able to register this one particular fact about this particular president?
Well, a lot of it is talk radio. A lot of it is Fox News. A lot of it is
But do they actually come out and say that president we have who's a Muslim?
Well, they wonder whether he is. But going back to that little thing I said, that little stupid joke about Joe Lieberman, it was interesting, the Republican Party in 2000, when Joe Lieberman was on the ticket, I don't know if that's the reason, but a sizable number of Muslim Americans voted Republican. Maybe because Lieberman was on the ticket, maybe not. But the point is, the Republican Party seemed to have an opportunity to curry favor with Muslims. After 2001, to his credit, President Bush made a clear distinction between the terrorists who flew planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and the Muslim religion. And yet, that seems to be a very long time ago, at least with Republican politics.
At least some Republicans.
Now, some.
Now
well,
let's
sure.
say let's say that a lot of people around George W. Bush, including Mike Gerson, his former speechwriter, Karl Rove, his former strategist, and others, have immediately come out and said, this is not a way Republicans should be going. We shouldn't be alienating Muslims. We should take a careful look at all this controversy, and we should not be lining the Republican Party up against Islam as a religion.
Ted Olson, whose wife perished in the plane crash into the Pentagon on 9/11, Republican stalwart, I mean, part of the Bush defense team in the 2000 election, he also said this is not the way to go politically for the Republican Party.
And yet, the Gallup poll shows 2-1 Americans don't like the remarks that the president made in defense of the right of the Muslims in New York to build this center. And people were upset about the president weighing in on it at all. And it's really become fodder for a lot of primary campaigns. Maybe this is August. Maybe in August we need something a little new and fresh to bang around between us as political observers. But coming right now at the particular moment of that controversy, this poll is probably going to be pretty inflammatory as well.
Well, it's part of it. I mean, if we were under President Bush and President Bush decided to go ahead with the building of the Islamic Center, just as President Bush defended the Dubai port deal. I mean, if Barack Hussein Obama, which I've seen over and over again.
Suddenly popping up again. The middle name is being dropped
in. All over the internets. If it was President Obama during the Dubai port deal, I mean, it's not a coincidence that the doubts about his ancestry and this controversy involving Muslims is obviously connected to a lot of people.
And one more thing for Democrats to be worried about as they head into the fall. Harry Reid, the much embattled Senate majority leader who's running for his life out in Nevada, immediately popped up and said, well, you know what, I'm not for that thing in New York. You know, I'm against that whole project. And I think there'll be quite a few other Democrats in conservative states who just flat out say, well, I disagree with the president. I think that's a lousy place to put the thing and it shouldn't happen.
You know something? We're bashing the Republicans and there are a lot of Republicans who deserve to be bash, but I think I have a little more contempt for people like Harry Reid. One, he's a Senate Majority Leader. Two, he gives Republicans cover saying, well, look, I back the Democratic Majority Leader on this, saying that this Islamic Center is a bad idea. And three, he, Harry Reid, has put the Democrats in a very difficult and uncomfortable position. First of all, I think President Obama did too, because I think many Democrats were blindsided by this sudden controversy. They should know that everything becomes controversial 90 days or whatever before an election. But the fact that Harry Reid, here we go again talking about throwing people under the bus, but the fact that Harry Reid threw the president under the bus, perhaps fearing for his own political viability, that just, I thought, was just contemptible is too strong of a word, but there was something about Harry Reid that just was not much different than what many Republicans did.
One politician whose behavior in all this has been kind of remarkable is Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York, somebody who has been very tough about not wanting to bring back the accused terrorists for trials in Lower Manhattan. He said that's not appropriate near Ground Zero. We don't want all of that security challenge. And he came out right away and said, look, however hallowed the ground of Ground Zero may be, this is a case of two very different things being conflated, and they have every right to do this. And he's been quite foursquare about it and taken the fight very much out into the country.
Well, before we go into Bloomberg and out in the country, first of all, he was not supposed to have even run for a third term, but he changed the laws. Obviously, he's not running for a fourth term, but you wonder what he is running for, because not only is he coming out very publicly in this, but he's also, as an independent, doing some very independent-minded endorsements around the country in the past couple of days.
That's right. Joe Sestak in Pennsylvania, Democratic candidate.
Kirk and Mike Castle, Republicans in Illinois and Delaware.
All of these are Senate candidates, and he says, well, I want as many votes in the Senate for the city of New York and other interests that New York shares with the rest of the country, if there are any, that I can get. And so he's for them. And he's also endorsing Adrian Fenty in the Democratic primary in Washington, D.C.
Not sure what good that does. Somehow, I don't know why this reminds me of this, but remember John Rarick, the racist congressman from Louisiana? When Mario Procaccino was running for mayor of New York City in 1969, John Rarick came in and said, look, I'll either oppose you or endorse you, whatever.
Whichever helps.
Whatever helps, yeah. I don't know why that reminds me of that.
Well, I think in Bloomberg's case, he's probably not going to get a whole lot of votes for Adrian Fenty that Fenty's not already going to get, and Fenty's problems are probably more on the black side of Washington, D.C. than on the white side, but whatever. You know, it's an endorsement, it's a nice lunch, and it gets them both on television and probably doesn't do him either one any harm. But Mike Bloomberg's been kind of interesting in this and certainly raising a lot of political eyebrows with all this travel he's doing far from the five boroughs.
I mean, this was a guy who was a lifelong Democrat who became a Republican in 2001 just so he could run for mayor. Then he switched to an independent, I guess, in 2007. And you wonder if he is looking at 2012 or beyond. I mean, we love to speculate about this, but I think he seriously looked at it, a presidential run in 2008, found that it was just not going to happen. But now everybody knows the end of his mayoral tenure is upon us, and perhaps maybe he is looking at 2012 or 16.
It's also very much in fashion for media moguls to be getting into politics these days, one way and another. Just this week, Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, which owns the Wall Street Journal and owns Fox News and owns a great number of other newspapers and media organizations around the world, gave $1 million to the Republican Governors Association for their campaign for the governorships of 37 states around the country this year. $1 million is still a lot of money in gubernatorial politics, and that particular gift coming from a guy who's supposed to be running a news operation.
Not a news operation.
Wall Street Journal.
A fair and balanced news operation.
All right, News Corporation. Right. I mean, look, nobody's ever been deceived about Rupert Murdoch's politics. He invented, well, Roger Ailes invented Fox, and Rupert Murdoch bankrolled Fox as an alternative to what they saw as the liberal media. We all understand that. But to just come right out and give $1 million to the Republican campaign?
Nobody is surprised by this, and yet everybody's outraged at the exact same time. And I think we've always known Rupert Murdoch's political leanings, Roger Ailes, as you say, but the actual money was a surprise. And we do know that the News Corp gave money. We know somebody who wanted to take money, receive money, and that was the former governor of Illinois.
the former governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, who was impeached in 2009 after he was essentially arrested and later charged with trying to sell the appointment that he was making to replace Barack Obama in the Senate way back in the late months of 2008. He never really managed to make a sale, apparently, but he did make an appointment, and that appointment, Roland Burris has been serving the seat ever since and is now retiring.
I think it's called a disappointment. But here's the thing, 24 counts of extortion and attempted bribery.
Going well beyond just that one seat.
Absolutely.
Lying to the FBI.
And the prosecution was convinced it was an airtight case.
Slam dunk.
And yet, here it is, 24 counts and only one conviction on lying to the FBI in 23 with a hung jury.
That's right. Now, lying to the FBI is still a pretty serious crime. It's what Martha Stewart got convicted of and sent off to jail for a little while. He would pay a fine. Perhaps he would even do some time in a federal prison if he does not get that one conviction overturned on appeal. But the government is saying it wants to retry the case on all the charges against both him and his brother. And so they're not backing down. They want to go at this again. Meanwhile, Blagojevich is saying that he's been completely exonerated. And, well, his attorney had a few things to say, too.
Listen, this guy Fitzgerald is a master at indicting people for non-criminal behavior. And if you don't believe me, go ask Scooter Libby. Same thing happened with him. They couldn't get him on any substantive offense, so they got him on some bull case that wasn't even a crime. Ask Scooter Libby. This guy is going wild. This guy is nuts.
Of course, Patrick Fitzgerald was the guy who brought the conviction on Louis Libby, Vice President Cheney's...
Same prosecutor as this case.
Apparently, it looks like there was maybe one wayward juror would kept...
Holdout juror.
One holdout juror that kept Blagojevich from being convicted on many other charges, and that may change if there's a retrial. But the fact is, he was convicted on a felony count, and yet he's standing there, Blagojevich is standing there, exonerated, like I win.
Well, and in a sense, I mean, it could have been much, much worse for him. And also, it's a little bit the phenomenon of taking the collapse of a prosecution for whatever reason and calling that exoneration. We've seen that before. I mean, that's certainly what a lot of people said in the Ted Stevens case, even though what happened was that the Attorney General decided to dismiss charges that had been brought earlier and tried and led to a conviction because the prosecuting attorneys misbehaved in terms of sharing information with the other side. It wasn't exactly the same thing as a total exoneration. And speaking of which, we have Tom DeLay.
Tom DeLay, the former House Majority Leader. The Justice Department alerted the DeLay defense team, saying they're dropping all charges regarding DeLay's association with the convicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff.
He was recently
out of prison.
And was cooperating with the investigation and willing to testify against DeLay.
Well, and Tom DeLay says, look, I knew this would be thrown out from day one. This was just a farce of a case, even though members of DeLay's staff went to prison. Bob Ney, the former congressman from Ohio, went to prison. Other members went to prison. DeLay got off. Now, DeLay is not completely free of
charges.
Not out of
the woods yet.
There is a money laundering indictment from 2005.
Which was really what forced him out of Congress.
From Ronnie Earle and the Travis County District Attorney.
That's Austin.
In Austin. But DeLay said, and I think the pretrial motions is next week. DeLay says that he'll be exonerated on that, too. But again, not to draw comparisons, but you always think of Raymond Donovan, the former Secretary of Labor under President Reagan, who said,
which office do I go to get my reputation back?
So you wonder, I mean, Tom DeLay was the most powerful man in Congress, certainly more powerful than Speaker Dennis Hastert, and yet it was an alarming and dramatic fall from grace.
You mentioned the hearings coming up, or pretrial motions in the Tom DeLay case next week, but all eyes will be turned next week to Arizona, Florida, and Alaska for the primaries.
Wait. What about Vermont? Okay, well, these are the four states having primaries next week. I threw in Vermont because, after all, Pat Leahy is running for re-election.
And there's a cliffhanger.
That's exactly. And I guess the interest in Vermont is the fact that Jim Douglas is retiring. The Republican and the Democrats think they'll pick up the seat again.
But all eyes will be turning to three other states somewhat to the west. Yes, Ken.
Well, let's start with Arizona.
Let's
start with Alaska because
furthest west.
Well, it's alphabetically first. We keep talking about Sarah Palin's endorsements, and I don't know why we keep talking about Sarah Palin's endorsements.
Because these are fine products, and she is, I think, rightfully allowed to tell us what products she uses.
Sure she is, but she writes a paragraph on Facebook page and that suddenly becomes a big story, which is just mind-boggling.
And the whole story of that particular primary result becomes whether it was pro or anti-Palin.
Right, which we saw in the gubernatorial runoff in Georgia, for example, and we saw the Tiahrt versus Moran in Kansas.
All right, but so who is she for in Alaska?
But this is the most interesting of all to me because she is endorsing a challenger to Lisa Murkowski, whose father, Sarah Palin, unseated in 2006. There is bad blood between, shall we say, the Murkowski in the Palins.
Can't imagine why.
Yes. So she's backed Joe Miller, who is basically unknown until this time.
Joe Miller!
Exactly.
Hey!
Tea Party favorite, and he's become a Tea Party favorite because, as you know, Lisa Murkowski is a rhino. Rhino is short for rhinoceros. Not many people know that. Anyway, by all accounts, it looks like that Lisa Murkowski is going to win big.
The Palin Watcher is going to have something of a field day with that. I mean, if you're talking about who she's for in Georgia, for crying out loud, this is really Sarah Palin's nameplate. And she's going to get clobbered there and people aren't going to talk about
that? Well, I don't know. I mean, I think she spent more time in the other states than she has in Alaska.
That's very possible.
Lately. But another endorsed...
To be fair, she served half her term.
She did, and it was grueling. It was grueling. But another case where she has made an interesting endorsement is in Arizona, where she is endorsed not the far-right conservative in the Senate race, J.D. Hayworth, but her former erstwhile running mate.
All right. Now, come on. I mean, she may prefer Hayworth in a lot of ways on the issues, and she may not be able to stand John McCain, but she cannot walk out in public and endorse the challenger to the man who raised her to national stature just these 2 years ago.
Anyway, so John McCain looks like he's in a romp over J.D. Hayworth, but at what cost to John McCain's legacy?
Ah, but there's another race that's also captured the media's attention down there in Arizona. Ben Quayle for Congress.
Yes, this is, by the way, it's Q-U-A-Y-L. It was a spelling bee that I was involved in. And look, this is, first of all, if you look at Ben Quayle, he looks exactly like Marilyn Quayle, but he does sound a lot like Dan Quayle. And there were two things that have attracted the media's attention, one of which I think is a little bogus, but anyway, there's a campaign flyer. Ben Quayle is running in the 3rd Congressional District. That's the one that Congressman John Shattuck is relinquishing. And there's a picture of him with two young girls, and Ben Quayle says, I'm going to raise my family in the district. Now, of course,
that's not his family.
It's not his family.
And it's probably not taken in the district.
Well, actually, it turns out to be his two nieces, but everybody went ballistic like he's renting a family.
Imaginary children.
But anyway, I thought the media and everybody went
that
a little
was unfair.
Bit too far. But
what about Dirty Scottsdale?
Well, Dirty Scottsdale is this a little a sex rag that Ben Quayle apparently wrote for years ago. First of all,
he tries to deny this.
He denied it.
But the publisher says, no, that was Ben Quayle writing under the pseudonym he chose from the name of a porn star in Boogie Nights, the movie.
And also, before we go, we should also talk about the Florida primary. And that's, for years, for the longest time, we talked about the Republican primary, which was supposed to be Marco Rubio versus Charlie Crist. Now we're talking about the Democrat. First of all, Charlie Crist being an independent, there is no Republican primary
that's right.
to speak of.
Crist is nominated. Rubio is nominated.
Right. And now it's the Democrats we have to talk about. Kendrick Meek, the African-American congressman, is the establishment choice. Bill Clinton was down there campaigning for him. But Jeff Green, this billionaire real estate mogul, is spending tons and tons of money, and he could beat Kendrick Meek. What's fascinating about this race is that it seems like it's a battle for third place, that no matter who wins, whether it's Meek or Green in the Democratic primary,
they'll be battling with Crist for Democratic votes.
They're going to lose to either Crist or Rubio.
Well, and Crist may even beat them among Democrats, because right. that's where his strength is going to lie in that race against Rubio, with independents and with Democrats. Interesting that Jeff Green, who came in, spent a ton of money, raced out ahead in the weeks of the early summer, now seems to have been caught again by Kendrick Meek. And that doesn't seem to be so much from Meek's campaign as it is from people finding out more about Jeff Green, how he made his money, how he bet on the mortgage collapse and made a tremendous amount of money as the rest of the country went bankrupt. That's not a really attractive story, and he seems to have kind of fallen back to earth.
And another multimillionaire who's running for office in Florida is Rick Scott. Again, the establishment choice in that Republican primary for governor to succeed Crist
is Bill McCollum.
Bill McCollum, the state attorney general, former congressman.
Impeachment manager in the House. He was a congressman.
In 98, right. And the Democratic nominee is Alex Sink, the chief financial officer of the state. She'd be the first female governor if elected. But Florida is one of those states, like Michigan, like a lot of the big states, where in some sense, it's more important than the Senate race, because redistricting is a big deal. Florida's likely to gain seats in 2012.
Yeah, don't tell Harry Reid it's a bigger deal than the Senate race. He needs every vote he can get, and that's a vote they're really hoping to pick up to counterbalance the loss of so many Democratic seats in November.
One more thing about Harry Reid. As ridiculous as Sharon Angle has been painted in the media, and
his Republican Tea Party opponent.
And yet the polls still show it dead even. So for all the faults of Sharon Angle, obviously Harry Reid has a lot of problems. problems in Nevada, and they have not gone away.
You know, because Tea Party dynamics in some of the western states are still playing out. The governor's race in Colorado featured a contest between several candidates. Then it was down to just basically two, one of whom was preferred, Dan Mays, by the Tea Party. He got the nomination, and now a lot of the conservatives in Colorado are trying to clear the field for him to be the opponent against Democrat John Hickenlooper, the mayor of Denver, by getting Tom Tancredo, the former Republican congressman, out of the race. He's running as an American Independent Party candidate.
Yeah, it's called the American Constitution, actually the American Constitution Party.
Right, an independent candidate, but with a party line.
Right. And, you know, we're talking about conservatives, and just to close this podcast, speaking of conservatives, there was a passing this week of James Jackson Kilpatrick, a longtime journalist, started out with the Richmond Times leader. We remember him, of course, with Point and Counterpoint.
On 60 Minutes with Shane Alexander.
Right.
And this was where they would call each other names, and she would say, you know, Jack, I can't believe you're such an old cave dweller or something like that. And then the names kind of got nastier and nastier, and that wound up being parodied on Saturday Night Live.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
The early part of Kilpatrick's career, he was an out-and-out defender of massive resistance to integration in Virginia.
He was a segregationist.
He was a segregationist. He was part of the Byrd machine. That's Harry Byrd, not Robert Byrd. The massive resistance backed by the Harry Byrd Democratic Organization in Virginia. But as he left the politics of race behind, he never left his conservatism behind. Still was an outright hawk on Vietnam. He was a longtime conservative columnist. And James Jackson Kilpatrick died this week.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rubin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Good morning. You can't touch me. Try to charge me, but I'm not guilty. I've got all of my mommy. Tell me what y'all want. For me, I'm not guilty.
I see how you're coming at me now. I'm cool. I'm not the snitch. I don't go to the cops to get rich. I go to the block and pitch. I go with the and click. I go with the pop. I'm sick.